Taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast. I am your host, Joseph Ward, and always ride with me is my man, Patrick Irvin, and my homie, Jamie Bashan. The Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX Inc. That's PAXCSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org, and that way you can learn more about PAX Inc. And remember, while you're on that website, click on the tab that says The Code so you can learn more about the 12 codes of conduct that PAX Inc. have created to help black America work more as a cohesive family and a cohesive unit. Also, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Follow us on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like our Freedom Train Network Facebook page. And last but not least, make sure you subscribe to the Freedom Train on either iTunes or Google Play Music, and you get episodes that come directly to your phone. Patrick, Jamie, throw your hands up. Put them in the air like you just don't care.
What's happening, fellas?
Don't talk to me right now, Joe, because you heard me doing the Jeezy ad-libs. That's universal sign for he's about to go in, and you cut the beat off.
Every time we try to get you to freestyle, you don't never freestyle. Go ahead.
Because y'all put me on the spot. You gotta
gave you a beatbox, right?
You gotta let me go when the beat be going. When you hear me doing the chill, that's...
You want to know why? Because you're not great.
Not at all.
But you know who is great?
These.
See, look at you, Jamie. Jamie, we're going to put you in timeout already for the show start, okay?
Well.
He from Texas, y'all, okay? He out there in Texas. Don't mind him.
I do not claim this state whatsoever. Not at all.
You a real Texan. You got them belt buckles and everything.
And
he got spurs on the back of his sneakers.
I ain't gonna put up with too much more of this.
I'm sorry.
But today, hey man, we have a friend of the show. We have Miss Carpool, the Great Griot, who is back on the show with us today. And you know, I had to go ahead and make sure I find our studio audience, because we got to give a round of applause for Ms. Carpool, the Great Griot. we had to revamp our studio audience. We back.
It's still kind of messed up that they just stopped their applause so abruptly, you know. Like,
well, they trained, okay? They still got other issues that we're trying to work.
See, y'all
asking too much, okay? How you doing, Cara? How you doing? Welcome back to the show.
Great. Thank you all for having me back on the Freedom Train. I appreciate that. Glad to be back in the studio with you guys.
Oh, no problem. I mean, you are doing some amazing things, and we want to make sure that we just give you your props, because there's a lot more new things that you have been doing, so we want to make sure. Huh?
Wait, Joe and Miss Poole.
What happened?
Y'all ain't even told him about the gun line yet.
Well, you tell us now.
No. What about all of the new people who this their first time? You know, it ain't their fault they ain't cool. It ain't their fault they didn't know. They don't know what they missing. They missed the last interview we had.
See, I'm about to fill them. I'm about to bring her. See, you just ride with me, Patrick.
All right, I'm sorry. Just you know what? See? I got excited because she's back. And you know,
if
I'm
this
sorry.
Was basketball, you just messed up the alley-oop.
I'm sorry.
Come on, Kobe. Come on, Kobe.
Matter
you
fact,
always
I
want to shoot.
I slammed my head into the backboard. My bad. I'm sorry. So, go ahead, Joe. Go ahead. Do your thing. You the host.
So if you don't know, you need to get to YouTube and type in The Great Griot. That's GREAT, GRIOT, and go check out all of her videos. Like, get you some popcorn, get you some snacks, whatever you need, and look at every single video that she's put up. I mean, she has some amazing information about Black history, and it's Black history, culture, education, everything that goes into making us great as Black people. And she isn't holding any punches. She's telling the truth. And it's very, very, very entertaining. I mean, you're going to be sitting there. You're going to be glued to your screen watching the information that she has and so many initiatives that she's a part of, so much time that she's put into the community on both coasts, on the East Coast and the West Coast. A HBCU graduate who's actually making sure that she uses her education and her wisdom and knowledge and her pride for her people to uplift her people. So once again, I bring to you Miss Cara Poole, the great Greer. Y'all get that. Give me
the multi-coaster.
There you go. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I appreciate that. Brother, if I go speak anywhere, I'm going to take you with me. Cause you
there you go. There you go. Like that dude on Ray. I got you.
What's Ray?
Oh, come on, Patrick.
Come on, Patrick.
You talking about the Ray Charles movie?
Patrick.
Yes, Patrick.
Oh,
Patrick.
Okay.
We talked about this before we started, Patrick.
I'm sorry. I'm going to sit back down.
Be professional, man. Come on, dog. We got guests on the show. We can't be in here acting like some damn fools.
Hey, man, she's family, and you're swearing.
That was before we recorded.
We'll call your mama on you, Jamie.
That was before we recorded. All right. We're not going to bring that up now.
Hey, y'all know how we do this. Patrick, you got the first question. Let's kick this off.
So, and we're going to ask this same question, because, you know, we can't help the people that ain't cool, except to try to make them cool. So that's what this very first question is intended to do. So for everybody that want to be cool, listen and learn. So for the people who don't know who the great Griot is, your background information, they not familiar with you, can you please enlighten them so that, you know, they can live out the rest of their lives from a happy place?
So they're not cool if they ain't heard of me. I tell you, y'all raised my confidence. The great Griot is, well, first of all, a little bit about my background. He said it. I went to HBCU, went to a Black school my entire life, but HBCU where I took a few courses but just interacted with more of my African-American professors who taught history, who taught it from a place that was more of our perspective. So, you know, that kind of opened my eyes to learning history, how we should learn history. And I've always been like an avid reader, like avid reader, constantly reading stuff. But when you start interacting with certain professors and teachers who can give you things in a different context, then, you know, it just kind of opened my eyes a little bit more pertaining to history. The other side of my background is I'm into video editing. I was into video production, which I started by acting, you know, been in a couple of national commercials and stuff like that, and that led into video production. And then, you know, I just started editing so that I could have more control of my time. So learning the video production aspect and loving the passion that I had for history and being an avid reader, I just really kind of merge it all. I mean, all of us on this podcast, we know about this new digital age technology. It doesn't take a whole lot, you know, to create some content to put it out there for people to see. You know, we're not all vying to get on a television network anymore. We can use YouTube. We can use Instagram and all of these different social media sites to put stuff out there. So I just kind of merged my background. I knew a little bit about video production, scripting some things, and then video editing, shooting, and so I created The Great Griot. And then I'll be honest with the audience and you all, I understood history from, you know, I began to see it from a different context. But like most of us, we are raised learning history from a very European perspective. It was after I started to create The Great Griot on YouTube, and having to read constantly so that I could script and create videos, that I it just it opened another world for me, just understanding what we're in right now, really understanding what we're in and our history from a perspective, you know, from our perspective in a context so that we can understand what's going on today. A lot of that came while creating the Great Griot because so much goes into it. But, yes, that's my background. That's how I, you know, came to create the Great Griot. And it started for youth, actually. And but I noticed with my back-end analytics, people who were responding, sending emails, it was a lot of adults. And it just kind of let me know that even adults, we don't understand history in a proper context. And if a lot of people out there haven't interacted with other people who understand it from a black perspective, you may never get it. So, you know, I just started seeing more adults respond to it. So as you watch the series, you'll see some of the beginning episodes were geared more towards youth, definitely. And some of the later episodes, you know, is definitely geared towards the adult audience who I saw was watching the YouTube videos.
Right. Yeah, I definitely get where you're coming from as far as when you're talking about when you're sitting down and you have to do the research and you're sifting through the information and you're reading, you're constantly reading, you start to realize how much of the information you're starting to soak up and you're reading. And a lot of times you'll realize that when you're in conversation or somebody says a certain thing and the information just starts to come to you. So I definitely agree and understand how you would start to grasp a better understanding of ourselves as African people, of our history and our place
in the world
right now, because you're looking at it constantly.
Constantly. Constantly.
All right. So, Ms. Poole, this is Jay. How are you doing today?
Hey, Jay.
How you doing? So, my question, the Great Griot, the series, a lot of listeners, you know, it's kind of foreign to them at this point. Could you explain, articulate why, like, you know, people should get behind it, people should really listen to what you're saying and what value it has to them? Because a lot of people, they'll brush it off like, oh, it's just, you know, somebody talking about history. But it's always important, like you said earlier, you know, putting stuff in the proper context, putting history in the context. Put what you're doing in the context and why people should really buy into it.
The reason that African Americans and even other people of color should pay attention to the Great Griot and all the great series out there that tap on the same thing is because, again, we go to an educational public school system, the majority of us, and the history that we get, even if it pertains to us, it's not from our perspective. It's from a European perspective. It's from a conqueror's perspective. And from birth, the same way that a white person would grow up in this society and have a superiority complex because this system creates that is the same way that we will grow up, go to the school systems, learn about their history, learn to appreciate everything about them, not learn the truth about a lot of stuff that has happened to us here. And as a black youth or black child or an adult who don't know, you will look at your people and it helps to create self-hate. You'll question, why don't we have our own society, our own sovereignty, our own communities, our own neighborhoods? Why are our economics so different from theirs? All these questions that you'll have oftentimes can't verbalize it because you just know that you look out and you always see in every state and city just about black people being on the bottom, and you won't understand it from a political standpoint, social standpoint, from any of those standpoints. And you'll never get it because you're studying this information from a European context.
Uh-huh.
So until you start studying it and studying it truthfully, and that's why on the Great Griot, we tap into some issues with white supremacy. We tap into some truths about what has taken place, even outside of slavery. It's then that you can understand that it's because we're under a system of white supremacy while we're in the state that we're in. And when you start understanding that truth, it doesn't change necessarily what you go out and see. You'll still go out and see black people being on the bottom just about in every state and every city in America, but you'll understand why. And then when you understand why, you can start questioning stuff today and start making changes, you know. And so why people should follow this type of history black people and people of color is because of that. We do not get it in the school system. We will not get it in the school system, and we shouldn't expect to get it in the school system. So seeking history, being taught from our perspective, is very important. And at least with the Great Griot, what we try to do, we do put a lot of work. Joseph, you said it. It's so much work that goes into researching and then creating the rest of these like videos that we create. But
right.
Our hope is that it's enough. Even if it's 10 or 15 minutes, it's enough to drop some names of people that you should go research further,
uh-huh.
or situations or events that you should go and research further so that you can understand why we are in the state that we're in right now. History explains that. And without history, we can't make a change. So, again, that's why people should look at the Great Griot, should read On the Shoulders of Giants, the book that you have, Joseph. That's why they should look at that content and that material. We have to. We have to understand it from our perspective. It's so important.
Yeah, Jamie.
No, hold on.
I know, in your face.
Nah, hold on. That's a good question. I mean, like, we battle rap. Talking about. You guys grow up. But one interesting thing I want to highlight that she said, she used your whole name, Joseph, so stick with that. Yeah, Joseph. All right.
Oh,
I just wanted to call that out just to mess with Joe. That's all. I'm being paid.
Joseph Aleusius Wall.
Yeah. Joseph Jackson.
Oh, is it Joe? Is it Joe? Just Joe on the Freedom Train?
Yeah, he tried to be cool on the show. Hey, guys, call me Joe. Call me Joe, guys. But when you called him Joseph, I almost burst out laughing.
Hey, see, we're going to I'm going to let them say your real name, Bartholomew.
All right, Joseph.
What happened?
But, you guys are horrible. She just dropped all kinds of jewels and knowledge.
And he come in with this.
Come on.
I particularly like really appreciate the video that you did on Dr. King and about the truth about his death and the information that you presented it, and not just the information, but how you presented the information to actually make people go and do their own research. You gave them enough to kind of wet the palates. All right, so now go ahead and research this information for yourself, and then so you can actually see that what I'm talking about is true.
Right. Right.
Well, you know, your platform is really effective, especially for getting the message across, because I know, like, since the last time you've been on the show, I've been following you, and I've even used several of your videos to initiate conversations with my kids, even with my wife. You know, the way you go about doing it, it's very obvious that there's some production knowledge there, because the production quality is always on point. But just the way the information is conveyed, and I mean, it's really, there are a lot of channels out there doing what you do, and they all deserve respect, but there aren't very many doing them the way you're doing them, with the quality that you're bringing to the table. And in that, I definitely think the extra effort you're putting for to bring it to us in that manner, that is definitely something that should be applauded and celebrated and encouraged. So, you know, it's really a beautiful thing. Like, you go to your channel. I don't have cable. Shut up, Joe. but, you know, like, I got the Fire Stick, so I could pull up YouTube on the TV, and, you know, like, going to your channel is like going to, like, a black documentary channel or something like that, where you just go through
nice.
It, high-quality stuff, wonderful information, broken down to a point where I don't have to pause it every 10 seconds and be like, all right, son, so what she's saying is, like, no, I just let it play.
Yeah.
It's
right,
a wonderful
right.
thing.
I'm mad you bootlegging her show on Fire Stick. That's what I'm mad about.
If it was on Netflix, I'd be watching it.
Nah, he over here burning your stuff. Get it, y'all.
Hey, first off, I'm an honorary Griot subscriber, supportee. What do they call the... Wait, come on, can you help me out here?
You're just a subscriber, pal.
There you go. Yeah, crazy, man.
I am more than a subscriber. I am her friend.
Let me thank you for what you're saying, though, because it takes some of my team members, too, who step in. Like, honestly, I think the next time that I shoot, I'm going to go live when I shoot so that people can see not just what I put in, but the other people who work with the team. Like, I always send these kudos to them because when I'm stressed out with gigs and I can't get to a great griot, you know, they step in and literally – I appreciate you saying it because it lets us know that what we're trying to do works. We try to crunch the information down. We try to chew it up, and then the way we give it back out is so that anybody can understand because, you know, like I said, my goal was for it to touch youth initially, and we saw more adults following it, but it's still teachers who reach out and say that their classrooms are watching it and stuff like that. So I definitely appreciate that. I'm going to pass that on to the other people.
Definitely. Send it off to the griotiers.
Make sure I have my griotiers hat, and I'm ready.
Hey, that's what I was looking for when Jamie was making me feel small and insignificant about my life with his very brutal and hurtful comments.
So, in addition to your Great Griot YouTube channel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard that you are doing an African history educational initiative that you are going to be starting soon. Is that correct?
Well, you thinking of working with youth?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I want to this summer. I'm going to tell you my dilemma, being honest, is how can I maintain a YouTube channel? Uh-huh. And still work with youth, but I have a strong desire. Like, I just actually started working in the school system a little bit.
Okay.
Out here at LAUSD, at the public school system out here. And, man, I'm going to tell you, God knows, like, our youth need us in so many capacities. And so I've been torn with how do I keep and maintain this YouTube channel, because literally it takes most of my spare time. Editing these projects, it takes, like, any spare time that I have, it goes towards the YouTube channel. But I want to, I feel like I want to touch youth more, you know, like, locally, like, grassroots, you know, because I want to see the change and help make a change. And I feel like, you know, we are all older. The people who are really going to have an impact on this society and make changes, I feel like it is youth. You know what I'm saying? They still have time. God knows, I wish I would have known this information that I know now when I was a kid, you know, when I was in middle school or high school. So that's my dilemma now. I do want to start working with youth, either through a summer camp, after school program, or Saturday school. I just got to kind of nail down what capacity or how I'm going to help them, but then figure out how to continue the channel and do that as well. But yes, I definitely want to work more closely with you in my area.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you know, let us know how we could help. I know we way over on this side, but anything that we can do to help, you definitely got us on board to help you out.
I appreciate it. Get some of your material, your book. As a matter of fact, I need to post that stuff on my website so people can start linking to it, because it's all the same information. It's good information that we need, yeah.
Thank you for that.
Well, I'm fairly young myself, so I appreciate y'all trailblazers clearing the way out for me.
Damn, you're 40, Pat. Get out of here.
My mama always told me people who names start with a J are hostile for no reason.
Hold on. Not everybody. I ain't hostile, so.
I'm hating today, so.
Is it Jamie? Jamie Foxx hostile, so Jamie Basham hostile. So.
I'm hating on each and every single one of you jokes.
Well, anyways. Mrs. Poole.
Yeah.
Why not just have you thought about a way you could mix the two together where you could incorporate the YouTube channel in your youth outreach?
We've thought about that as well. The dilemma is really it takes a lot to keep it up to where it is now. It just takes a lot. So it could be something, but, you know, if we decide to do a summer program, you kind of lose those youth after the summer, and it would probably take that long, you know, just going over what we do, you know what I'm saying, the research. And the shooting and stuff like that would be easy, but really digging and researching and stuff like that. So we would kind of lose the youth after the summer. So okay. We don't know if that would be super effective. And then when it comes down to editing, my main thing is editing these projects, just because we actually go and listen to all of these speeches. We listen to all these interviews, hours of it, to pull out certain sound bites to help people get the meaning. You know what I'm saying? So all the information isn't coming from me. You're pulling other people. You know, and literally those hours adds up to days. So we don't know if that will be effective yet, but maybe if we were to do, like, the after-school program where we have them for a longer term, then we can maybe merge the two. So we're still figuring out the best route to take to hopefully keep everything going.
Well, you know, my side job is to help people figure stuff out. So it's not really, I just felt like saying that. Anyway, I got another question. It's not really on topic, but I got a question. So I'm scrolling through, let me not lie, because I don't be on social media like that. So I'm talking to this woman. I didn't want to say I was talking to an actual person, because it always sounds better. For some reason, it sounds more credible when you say I'm scrolling through Facebook than when I was talking to a person. This is a crazy world we live in. Anyways, be quiet, Joe. So I'm talking to this lady. And we were actually talking about this earlier today with one of the other show friends, Professor Carlton Jones, who we're going to get back to him and his Independence Day project, because you're in it. Yes. Yes. But you as a black woman, in today's day and age, where we're running into issues where black women feel under attack, they feel like they're not protected, they feel like they're being failed by both the system and the men around them. How do you take all of that in? What advice would you give to the black men nowadays that are listening to that and trying to figure out what to do? What advice would you give to the black women who feel like that? Just what's your general response to the current plight of the black female and all of the different narratives coming out of that portion of the population?
I believe that, and in my opinion, because I'm no way some some scholar in any of this, but in my opinion, honestly, I hear so much, whether it's on social media or even out here where I'm at this black park and stuff like that, I hear so many people talking about black men, and you hear black women, you know, black men talking about black women. And it feels like today we are tearing each other down tremendously. You know, being a black woman, I get around a lot of other black women, and now, like I said, because I'm starting to understand this system of white supremacy that we live under, I can't join in with my sisters in saying certain things about black men, you know. But then I hear black men and how they run sisters down. At the end of the day, I feel that black men and black women right now are not taking in account each other's struggle under this system of white supremacy. I believe that we both share equally in this struggle. It's just that we have a different struggle up under it. Right. I will admit, studying warfare, even other empires prior to this Roman Empire that we're still under, men are always the first line of attack. Women and children are the spoils of war.
Right.
So men, black males, I know that you guys go through it in a different capacity than what I do. I know that a lot of black males, especially, like, you know, when I'm down in the black areas of L.A. and stuff like that, you see the cops constantly. You see how people get railroaded in court. You see it's a lack of opportunities. You see all of these things, and it takes away from the black male, period. the black male who's supposed to be the father, the protector, the provider, all these things that the black male is supposed to be, living under this system of white supremacy, it continues to knock and tear away at that. Mm-hmm. You know, and so you see, and then you see even how they're, a lot of black males are raised, because it's a perpetual cycle, that if it's not a father in the household because he had his own demons to deal with under this system of white supremacy, then that also aided to, you know, black males sometimes not having what they need to be to stand up and be male. And so I sympathize with my black males because it's a constant daily struggle that black males deal with, and it's different from black women. A lot of times we don't deal with that. We don't deal with the interaction with cops the same way that black males do. We don't deal with the lack of opportunities like black males do. Like out here, there are certain scholarships and grants and opportunities for women only. And I'm thinking, in a society where these black men are at the bottom, you gonna give it to women only? So I know that men have a different struggle than women have. But at the same time, women have a whole different struggle that sometimes black men don't take into account. Or, you know, they take it lightly, like a woman's worth. Like, we have completely come out of being feminine, and we've had to step up to the plate to take control of situations because our man is under attack. But what comes with that is what we like to label, and is not healthy, this independent, you know, strong black woman. No, let's call it what it is. You a controlling woman. You know, and a lot of times we are boisterous and we have a lot of masculine ways. Well, why is that? I'm not going to blame the black male because he's under attack under this system of white supremacy that has taken him out of the household. So my grandmother, my mother, and the rest of them who had to learn to live life trying to support and maintain where he was being attacked, they taught me, and I'm going to say this personally, they taught me some ways that I'm still trying to shed to this day. And I wrapped it up in being independent, but no, I was controlling. I ran my mouth. I ran things. If I was in a relationship with a guy, I was more of his mother. Not like I didn't like him, but I was controlling everything. So I couldn't give him a chance to be a man. And so if you don't understand where our problem comes from and you don't respect each other's struggle up under it, and try to be there for each other as opposed to point the finger at one another, we begin to blame the victim. We are both the victims under this system of white supremacy. And until we start recognizing that, we won't turn the finger and point the blame where it belongs. Now, even though the blame belongs where it is currently with this system of white supremacy and what we're still dealing with, I do feel that both of us, the black man and the black woman, it's a lot that we have to shed, that we have to relearn and redo. And I'll speak from a woman's perspective. I am still learning today what it means to be feminine, because this society teaches you that femininity is going shopping, buying shoes, trying to look sexy for the world. You know, all these things of what a woman is supposed to be. Let's be honest, we're not really taught what a woman is supposed to be in this society. You know, so we're having to go back and relearn our roles. Why? Because we're going to have to fix our communities and our families and readjust back to how we should be to be healthy for each other. Even though it's not our fault where we are responsible for correcting it because we can't expect anybody else to. So I never get into blaming one or the other because it's a circle. It's a continuous cycle. You know, we can't blame a black male. We can't blame the black woman. We have to put the blame where it belongs, but we do have to work on healing ourselves.
That's true.
Wow.
I appreciate your answer because it's a thorough answer, and it's an answer from somebody who is studied, because it's being able to take a critical look at what has actually happened to both sides, still allowing both sides to be able to take accountability on things that they have to take accountability on, but still not taking the spotlight off the real enemy, which is white supremacy. Like David Banner says, if a computer gets a virus, you're not going to blame the computer, you're going to blame the virus. But somehow, right, with white supremacy, we blame black people instead of white supremacy. So.
And you know what? now I'm like, why did I ask her that? Because she just completely, like, I might as well just tell the people to stop working on my book.
So
just listen to Carol. Just Carol. Matter of fact, where's the studio? Oh.
There you go. Hold on. There you go.
Look at you. So, come on, Joe. That's a long applause. My golly, man.
Man, that's Pat.
Yo, you trying to drop Funkmaster Flex bombs. Relax. Relax,
man.
Relax.
And then she deserves every
Hold
second
on.
You tell the crowd they should have gave her more.
Hold on. So I got a question, and it kind of piggybacks on everything you were just talking about. So I'm pretty sure you're aware. Everybody was aware. They were blowing up about it. Doc Gilmore made those statements about interracial relationships on the black man should be with a black woman. We talked about it on the show, but we're just a bunch of dudes, you know, of course, so people are going to take it as it is. From a female perspective, how do you feel, how did it make you feel when you heard a black man saying a black man's loyalty and alliance should be with a black woman? How did that, like, how did that whole conversation feel from your perspective? And we all script here, so just go ahead.
Personally, now that my eyes are woke and I have studied and understand this system, I love that, because, you know, I love to hear that a black man would be loyal to a black woman, because we have been so diseased and we have social ills that make us demonize each other. And, you know, women carry an extra burden. We carry an extra burden on our behalf, and that's, women do have this thing where they have to be beautiful in some aspect. They fear it, they look, they whatever, because that's what attracts a man. And forever, the fact that our beauty standard is tied to that European,
right?
That's one of the struggles that women deal with in such a huge way. I mean, for me alone, when I go back and I trace through my life and I see how, I'm going to share this. I shared it on Instagram, so I'm going to put it out there. My mom put a jury curl in my head at the age of like 6 or 7. My mom has passed down the whitewashing of myself, teaching me at a very young age that I'm not good enough the way that I look. And so I grew up, even though I couldn't verbalize it, didn't understand it, if somebody would have told me, I would have said, you lying, you know, because I didn't take the time to really rationalize. But I've been raised holding myself to a European standard. I've been raised that if I went into a room with another female, even if she was a black woman who had more European features, then I was completely out of my league. Like, why am I in here? You know, because I knew, like, oh my gosh, these girls just, why am I in here? I don't even fit in here. I grew up myself with that, and women carry that extra burden. And so, yes, if more brothers, not just said I was going to date a black woman, but if they had a healthy concept and self-love, black self-love, of loving black people how they are, how they look in their natural state, then, yes, I am absolutely for that. Not black men who still have a strong self-hate problem because they get with black women and they actually help perpetuate the problem.
Right.
They actually want them to look more European. They actually turn them into a little Kim and stuff like that because she's dealing with the same self-hate. But a brother who has self-love, he loves himself, he loves his hair that grows how God made it to grow, then he's going to love that woman how God made her. So no, I'm all for that. But then on the other side, to add to that with what Umar Johnson said, I think maybe what he didn't verbalize, and I totally get this from Nellie Fuller, is that just politically and socially, we as black people, we put ourselves in a predicament in this society when we do date somebody who is white, as long as we're under the system of white supremacy. Let's be honest, if we lived in a world that was truly of equality and balance, more balanced than today, it wouldn't be a problem with people intermarrying between different races and stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, think about prior to white supremacy. You know, the early Africans who did come over to America, they were intermingling with the people. That's why you had some Native people who were dark skin complexion.
Right.
You know, they did link up. And it's not a problem if you don't have this unjust system of white supremacy stating that one has a power system behind them in an unjust system, which means that today, if a black man gets with a white woman, I don't know, y'all might love each other. But as long as you are living under a system where she has a power system backing her up, at any time, if she's not choosing right now to participate in the system of white supremacy, good for you. But the fact that we are in an unjust system and at any time she can get mad at you and decide to participate in the system of white supremacy, you as a black male are left completely vulnerable.
Yes.
And used, which means that any time if she wants to say, hey, he raped me, hey, he did whatever, you're not in a just system. You're not going to be treated with equality. Take Tiger Woods. Even though he didn't say he was black, they said you're black.
Right.
And even though whatever happened in your marriage, look how much that court system decided to transfer of your wealth over to this white woman. You're not in a just system. So in that aspect, I say, if you say that you just want to love who you want to love, I'm all for that. But I think that we should do that once we work on ending this system of white supremacy. And then we're in a situation, an equal power situation, where you're both protected. But until then, we are not. We're not in that predicament.
How you said that, I think if it was articulated in that fashion, the message would have been received different by a lot of people, because really, really did a great job articulating that from a different perspective.
Tiger Woo.
But I mean, it's what she said is exactly true. That's how I feel. People don't really understand the system of white supremacy and racism, and because we don't, we're not really looking at it. Because when you're having that conversation with some people, and they're saying, "Well, I would let my child date white women when they were young, but when they become a teenager, now I'm going to teach them that you should date white black women." No, you should teach them to date black women from the beginning. You should teach them. First of all, you need to be teaching them self love and pride within themselves as an African person. Because once when the black man really loves himself as an African person, he's going to make sure that his woman is an African person too. Because that's true self love and love for your people and your mother as well. So
that's essentially what we said on the other show, is that the real issue is self hate. You know, now we do need to have a show, and maybe we can have Ms. Poole back for a social discussion show. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can have the Great Griot and the Grioteers back for a social discussion show where we talk about, you know, the economics of relationships, which is something that I don't think people pay attention to, the transfer of wealth that's apparent when you're looking at the economics of wealthy relationships. We started to talk about the politics of love, you know what I'm saying, and how it is a lot deeper than just, oh my God, I feel so special when they come around. You know, there's a lot more going on than that needs to be talked out. We got social issues tied in, political issues tied in, economic issues tied in. So, yeah, I mean, you know what? I ain't gonna tell the crowd to applaud, because Jamin and I already slapped my hand once. It still hurts.
He hated clapping for him.
Way too much. So to get into the question, we're going to kind of transition here a little bit. And so you graduated from HBCU, correct?
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about the HBCU presidents meeting with President Trump? And what is your opinion on the type of message that sends out to HBCU students? Ooh, she took a deep breath. This is about to be deep. Yes, I asked a good question. Yes.
You know what? Again, I go back and say, when you do study and you understand the system of white supremacy, even studying a lot of these HBCUs, They started under, they didn't start to teach African Americans to be top leaders and to run this society and this world.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our HBCUs were created to give us skills and trade so that we could go in and still be at a certain place in this society. It was never meant to compete with traditional white universities. Now, I say that, but I also say that we've had a lot of professors, a lot of chancellors who have gone into these schools, and they had a heart for black youth, and they do any and everything that they can in their power to create an environment for us where we can learn, where, you know what I'm saying, where we can go out into the best of our ability, compete in this system. So they've done a great job with that. So for me, this is going to sound weird, but when they met with Trump, it just kind of reminded me that these HBCUs are here for a particular reason, and they're not here to teach black people again to run this system. It's here to teach us, to put us in a particular place in this society. Then do I like that they met with Trump? No, because right now he is the symbol of, you know, white supremacy, but like I said, again, when you start understanding this system of white supremacy, Trump is, of course, a white supremacist. But, you know, I got to be honest, Obama did just as much to help maintain this system of white supremacy.
Right.
George
right.
Bush, Bill Clinton, the rest of them, they were only the leaders and the spokesperson to help maintain this system of white supremacy. Because up under Obama, many of these HBCUs were systematically either getting defunded, working their way to being shut down, all these restrictions and regulations on them to where they have to open their doors and give scholarships and grants and stuff like that to white students because they have to now have a certain percentage of minority. You know, so a lot of stuff that was occurring with HBCUs was happening under Obama. So I think, you know, when I see these leaders meeting with Trump, you know, we could get upset and we could get mad because we see the symbolism of what's taking place. But the truth of the matter is, again, we live under a system of white supremacy where our, it's just what it is. We have to recognize it is what it is.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it really is. We don't.
I just had somebody come to my window and was speaking. I'm like, okay.
Not you, all right.
But no, again, just when you live under a system of white supremacy and you know it, is not just coming from Trump, you guys. What we're in right now, and I look at some of the bigger things, and I want to ask this question to you all because all black males on this on this podcast. One of the bigger things that is kind of scaring me a little bit about Trump, because I will say that I haven't experienced it in my lifetime a lot, you know, with me being older, is how he is amping up to recriminalize black people. That's what I'm kind of afraid of right now for him. Like, the whole war on drugs from Nixon, we know that that was a direct attack on black people. Even one of his advisors admitted that later on, in order to militarize the police, send them into the communities, and stop a lot of this progression that was taking place. And then, you know, so when I see Trump doing that now, even in cities where crime rate has gone down, and he has spread the propaganda as if every major city is a Chicago, and now he just got on television telling them, don't be too nice to him, and got all these race soldiers clapping.
I saw that. I saw
smiling
that.
And so he's giving them permission to amp up the brutality on people. That's what scares me more with what Trump is doing. And I'm like, that's not one of those things that's going to be direct on black women. It's going to be a direct kick on black men, and I can't stand it. But I want to know, like, how do you guys feel about that?
Well, I know me in particular, one of the biggest things I'm thinking about is how they are supposedly decriminalizing marijuana, but you have all these extra stringent things that Trump is trying to reintroduce, and then just the overall interactions that we've historically had with the police, and a resurgence of in-your-face white supremacy in a lot of these areas where it was more covert, and a resurgence of and police brutality. It's troublesome to me because I feel like we're going to see more and more of our black men we're going to see more and more of our black men in prison. We're going to see more and more of our black men being targeted by the police, being killed by the police, or just even killed by white people who are supposed vigilantes out looking for black people to kill. And it's just one of the most troubling things is we're not organized and we're not ready. We're not prepared for the things that they have for us. So to me, that's where my worries come from on us as black people, because like you said earlier, after they attack us, then they're coming for our women and kids next. And we see more attacks on our women and kids, which means that they are really being effective in their attacks on black men. So I would like to see that reversed. I would like to see us like be able to recognize what's really going on and be able to combat that. What about y'all, Jamie Payne?
I think to me it's the dog whistles, you know, not just, you know, from the administration. You still got Jeff Sessions up there jacking stuff up. It's the dog whistles that are empowering people out here who feel it's okay now. Like, okay, cool, I can, you know, speak how I speak in my living room out in public. They had a video that went viral of this white lady going off on these Somali Americans and da-da-da, this, that, and other. So I think a lot of it is empowering these people, you know, and putting us in a position where, you know, we got to defend ourselves. You know, I'd be damned if somebody come up and just be hostile towards me because I'm just being me. So to me, that dog whistle stuff, it's awakening a lot of stuff with the dominant society has been, you know, they've been hiding these feelings for quite some time. And to me, that's the most dangerous point because what a lot of them doing really don't have any power to affect our lives on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, empowering those people that's right there that can get in your face and, you know, like that one cop in Michigan holding some black kid in his yard, you know, pinning him down on the ground, stuff like that. They feel empowered now to do ignorant-ass shit like that. So, to me, it's one of those things where we can't be naive about it. We actually have to, you know, think smart. This isn't a good time for our kids to be, you know, just... When we were kids, we could go out, you know, hang out in the street till about 2 o'clock in the morning, chill, you know, we're in the middle of the hood, everything's good, nothing's wrong going to happen. But now we can't be that naive and think our children are safe out here, think our families are safe out here. We got to take those measures, and that's going to come with a little sacrifice. So me, I look at it as to how can we get on point, how can we get on code to make sure, you know, we all make it home safe and we go, because it's... Eventually, all this stuff's going to turn over. Some things are going to happen. Everybody know it. We're just waiting on it. So until those things happen, and we need to make sure we're taking care of ourselves and making sure we're safe in our communities.
Right.
So you ain't going to add to that, Pat?
I mean, I was listening to you guys as you were talking, so I wasn't really thinking about my answer until after Jamie stopped.
I just mess with you. Go ahead.
But I do, you know, like for me, the situation with, you know, the new administration is really a continuation of, like you said, what was happening in the last administration, but on a separate end. I mean, the moment Barack Obama got sworn in, there was an increase in the number of white supremacist activity and white supremacist organizations in America, and that number has been ticking up for the last 8 years. So, right. You know, this even the election of Trump was something that, you know, kind of showed that America was very resistant and very much opposed to a lot of the new changes that they perceived was coming. Jeff Sessions, he's in a fight with Trump right now, but he's already released statements saying that he wants attorneys to go back to Clinton-era policies in terms of drug enforcement. He's instructed the courts to seek maximum penalties and mandatory minimums, which essentially means he's going back to the 90s era's war on drug policy that incarcerated so many of us. So, you know, we've obviously got the increased activity. You got them defunding programs that primarily help black kids and low-income kids. And when you're talking about the TRIO programs and Betsy DeVoe and her budgets. And so, I mean, I don't see it as anything new or anything extra in terms of how I view it as a black male. I view it as the continuation of what's been going on. the continued escalation, the continued streamlined escalation of hostilities, outward hostilities towards black people because of perceived advances and advantages that they think. I don't even know if they really believe we have them. They're just upset because people keep talking about us is what I really think is going on. But, you know, it is what it is. I would be, you know, I think it would be naive of me to say that Trump symbolized anything other than the blatant outrage of white America to having a black president for the last 8 years, but then pretend like it did anything other than that. The moment right. Barack Obama was elected, those people were empowered. That gave them a message, a rallying cry. Trump didn't do nothing but give them another one. But without Barack Obama, they don't even have the initial surge. So, mm-hmm. Like, that's how I see it. Do I think we need to be careful? Yes. But I think we should have been being careful. Right. Do I think we need to pay attention? Yes. But I think we should have been paying attention. You know, so that's kind of how I look at it all. Am I having different conversations with my children now? I will admit, yes, I am. Right. Because of the extreme, you know, like here in Charlotte, there's a guy suing because he's a black guy. He was driving through North Carolina, and he stopped at 5 gas stations, and nobody would let him use the bathroom because he was black.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, you got things like that that are occurring now where it's like, wow. And not, it's not even that they're happening. It's that, you know, they're bold enough to let us see that it's happening. Like,
right.
So
it's taking the mask off, so to say, but not totally. But right. they're starting to say, yeah. Hey, we're here and we're in your face. So what you going to do about it?
Right. And the media is not even concerned about any sort of outlash or whatever. Like, everybody is just bold enough. Here it is, right in your face. Cop kills another nigga. Look at it. Look at it. Look at it.
Mm-hmm. But you hit on one thing, Pat, and I want people to really pay attention. The so-called liberal media is just as worse, or to me, even worse than conservative media. And I think people get low to say, oh, we're liberals, this, that, and the other. They are worse. Like, if you were paying attention when the OJ got paroled, the liberal media was like, they were treating this dude like he was goddamn Jeffrey Dahmer. God, like, I mean, literally, and I was just like, man, the liberal media is worse than conservative media, so don't get tripped up and say, oh, I'm liberal, so, you know, nah, these jokers are just hiding in plain sight. That's all it is.
That's crazy.
Right.
Hey. So I wanna ask this question to you, Carr. Like we mentioned earlier, you are featured in the upcoming film, The Independence Day Project, which was put together by Professor Carl Tone Jones. And I just got through watching a clip of it yesterday. You are definitely, when you got to check it out if you haven't, but you're definitely in the clip, and it's you're giving great information. So what type of role or what type of information was you giving in this? And this is a documentary, so what type of information were you giving? And can you give us your overall perception of your experience being a part of this project?
Yes. First of all, kudos to Professor Carl Tone Jones. He's a brilliant man, and him putting together this documentary, we talked about it a couple of times, he's brilliant. I mean, just his concept alone was like, just let black people picture what it would be like if we were independent. What would it be like if we, you know, fought off white supremacy, or how can we? Let's have a discussion of doing it, of trying to dismantle this system. And then what would it look like afterwards? Because a lot of our conversation, because we're in it right now, is talking about what we're in, you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. As opposed to how do we dismantle it. So in his documentary, one of the main things that I had discussed was black people being on having codification.
Uh-huh.
You know, black people, we've been stripped of our culture. You know, whether it's in America or some of these other colonized lands that we've been in, and so we don't have that internal mechanism that automatically tells us to buy from one another, you know, how to treat one another. We, you know, we have self-hate added in there, so we treat each other worse sometimes than white people treat us, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we have a lot of social ills with us that has stripped away any type of culture. You know, we don't know, a lot of us, what it really means with raising a family, selecting a mate, you know, that's going to create a child that's beneficial and healthy for the society. Like, it's just a lot that we don't know. And, you know, I look at Nelly Fuller, how he created the code, and I said, you know, I think one of the ways of what we could do to dismantle white supremacy is implementing codification for black people to live by. Now, a lot of people don't know this. I know my audience probably don't know this, but I'm Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the codification that I live by as far as Islam and the way of life, it does reteach it. It teaches the everything that's opposite of this white supremacist system. Your beauty standards, family, a woman's role, a man's role, how you interact with each other, on what concept do you forgive one another, when do you hold somebody else accountable. And so I even take that and I look at the codification. If black people had a codification that showed us, like almost went back and re-implemented a culture within us, some of our internal mechanisms would offset white supremacy. Like, what do I mean? You take, for example, I take one of the way of life of Islam. There is no such thing as birth control with Islam. First of all, this earth is not overpopulated. It's overpopulated
right.
with greedy people,
right.
but it's not overpopulated. You take that one codification that you do not take birth control. When your creator decides for you to have another baby, it's going to happen. Can you imagine for black people if that was part of our codification? All the times that they've tried to sterilize us, that they've tried to, you know, they've put this Planned Parenthood out there for us, the number of babies that have died through abortions, all the different attacks that they've had on us just with our birth rate and our population, for population control, for their benefit, that one codification, look how it would have benefited us. Look how that one code would have helped us as a collective to overcome them trying to decrease our population. And again, that's just by living by the code. We don't take birth control pill. It's not healthy. It goes against your body. You know what I'm saying? And so you look at all these codifications. You look at the codifications for women, how women are supposed to act. What are you supposed to select in a mate? As a society, we look at accountability, your codification. How do you hold even your own accountable for coming against you, you know, with murder and everything else? Like, if we had that code that we could implement back as our culture, each individual person would be responsible for certain actions towards themselves, towards each other, for us to rebuild and help with building a strong community again. And, you know, in that alone, each individual person would actually be responsible for helping to oppose white supremacy. Now, would that help, you know, because I don't know how white supremacy would be dismantled. It may take war. It may take an armed revolution. I don't know. But at least each individual person could stop doing things that would work to help maintain this system of white supremacy right now. You know, so that's one of the things that I spoke on there, was just a codification. If we had a way of life, do's and don'ts, that we had to follow. And I'll give you one more example.
Mm-hmm.
There's some amazing rap artists out there.
Right.
But it's a lot of rap artists, and we know that hip-hop has been taken over by people who are trying to commercialize and make money off of it, and they definitely don't want a message of, you know, violence towards them, but they're okay with any violent message towards us. You know, so they will promote a lot of that, where we had in our codification that we don't promote that type of message. We don't listen to that type of message. And if we had black people who would stick by that code, no matter what white person is trying to put that garbage rap out there, in order to influence the youth and anybody else who listens to it, if we had a codification where each individual person is responsible for saying, hey, I'm going to stick by the code, I'm not going to listen to it, I'm not going to buy that. The white people who push it, who have the money, they wouldn't make money off of it. And the rappers who rap in that type of garbage mess, they wouldn't do it because it's not going to promote your career. You know, so it's the individual choices that we can make that, you know, could help us as a collective.
Get my album, a.k.a.
But no, that's that codification, being on code, having the code, having that universal concept of what we do, how we act, and all these things here, that's what we talk about here all the time. And, you know, even the organization that that sponsors this have a code of conduct that was created for black people. And being on code helps us to be able to eliminate a lot of the internal ills that we have towards each other, so we can better more focus on those around us. Like, our biggest enemy is white supremacy, but we often try to minimize that. So that's why, that's why I'm glad, like, you are doing what you're doing, because not only do you understand what's going on, you can accurately articulate it, but people also want to listen and want to get more from you. So, you know, once again, I take my hat off to you and what you're doing, and you know you always have my support.
Thank you so much, all of you. I appreciate you all. Appreciate the Freedom Train.
No problem. No problem.
So before we get out of here, we got one more question. It's kind of, you know, highlight you again and your accomplishments and what you're doing. So you got your own production company, KOP Productions. Tell us again, you know, how you created the company and where is it heading? What you got going on with the company?
Actually, right now, this is a great turning point for KOP, for Kara Pool. I do the video productions. I have clients right now, but I'm not looking to stay in that lane. I really am looking in the future on how I can better work with you. That is my now. I will say, with production out here in Los Angeles, as far as work wise, I have been toying with getting back into production as far as entertainment. And so we're going to see how that goes. But even me getting back into entertainment somehow, it would be for the sole purpose of saving up and having better finances to finance some of the things that I want to do in the community. So that's actually the direction that I'm headed in. Anything with video production, like I said, it may be with, you know, working on some sets out here, working on some film production sets. And yeah, after that, I really want to work with you. That's my goal. Somehow, I want to work with you, because I just feel that if they know and understand what a lot of us are just now grasping, with these fresh ideas, brilliant minds, that they could really help make a change. Not taking us off of the block, like, you know, we can't make a change, but I'm just saying that they have so much more time, so much more vigor, less responsibility, and and so that's where I'm looking to put my efforts in the future, is how can I work more with you directly.
That'd be good, because like I say, they'll greatly, greatly benefit from what you can bring to them. All right, so we've got to our final question, and this is usually Pat's question. We asked it once, but we want to kind of revisit this question. And we always, if you remember, we started off with a little flair so Pat can feel good about himself.
So, Kara Pool, if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
You know what? I remember this from last month. You know what? I'm sticking with my answer, education. Education. If I could change that for all Black youth, if I could wipe out a lot of these garbage public school systems for our Black youth and have them in some, you know, up under some African-centered schools, teaching them the truth across this nation, that is what I would change and do, because I think that would, you know, I think that would make a huge difference and impact for all of us.
Nation building. That's what that is, nation building, well, preparing the youth.
Last time you said you would divide the resources and land equally and create a sovereign nation for Black people.
Ooh.
Dang it, we can do the darn thing. That's what you said.
And you know what? And I think that by a mass education of our youth and them having the correct political understanding, I think it could bring that change. My goal wouldn't just be sovereignty. It would be absolutely dismantling white supremacy. And
yes.
I think through that, we could have our own sovereignty. We could live as humans do and create our own communities, our own states, nations, all of that when we no longer have a problem that we have now.
That's true. That's true. So before we wrap it up, can you tell people where they can find you and if they want to get in contact with you, how they can get in contact with you? And, of course, you know, tell them about your YouTube channel, how they can subscribe to your Great Grill YouTube channel and everything. So.
Yes. You can find me by going to thegreatgriot.com, and griot is G-R-I-O-T, French. But G-R-I-O-T is the Great Griot. Go to the website. If you want to contact me, go to the Contact Us page and just send your information through the Contact Us page, and it'll send your information to all of my devices. And on YouTube, make sure to check out the YouTube channel and subscribe and click the notification button so that you can be notified when a new video comes out. On YouTube, it's the exact same thing, The Great Griot, G-R-I-O-T, on YouTube. So make sure you check out the channel.
Yep, yep. And I'm telling you, you will be thoroughly impressed and thoroughly educated, and it will help you understand our place as African people in America right now under this system of white supremacy. Because, like Cara has said, and we've said in the past, we don't really understand. And Neely Fuller Jr., if you haven't studied him, study him. Because, like, put it like this, Neely Fuller Jr. is the man who put Dr. Francis Cress Welsing onto this information. So, and he's still alive and kicking it. And so it's just great information for us to understand who we are. But, Cara, I mean, you are amazing. That's all I have to say. The world is definitely better with you, and we're our community, our people. We appreciate what you do, what you bring to the table, the energy, the time you give up, the sacrifices you make. You and your team, what you all are doing is so great and so amazing that, you know, we want to make sure that we give you all your proper due. So thank you once again for everything that you and your team do and continuously do on a regular basis for our community. And you know we got to give you another hand clap before you get up out of here. Our studio artists got to give it up to you. Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Appreciate it. That was good. That was real good.
Yes.
Thank you.
She's the truth.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys having me on the Freedom Train. I truly appreciate it. I enjoy coming on with you, brother.
Thank you very much. Thank
Please forgive us. We a little ignorant every now and again. We got to cut up on, you know, cut loose every now and again. Keep people entertained.
He talk about we. He talk about
Joseph.
Hold up, Pete Texan. thank you for coming on, and we definitely will stay in touch because, like Patrick was saying, we definitely have to get you back on for a social discussion and kind of go in on some topics.
Yes, and I want to put your books on my website, so I'm going to reach out to you. I just want to put a link, you know, so people can
get
on my website and get more information on what you're doing.
I appreciate that.
All right.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You guys so much.
No problem. See you later.
You too.
All right. Man, if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory.
See Kurt Franklin now?
Right? What is going on here?
This dude turned to Kurt Franklin.
Hey,
man. Plies to Kurt Franklin. Look at
this
guy.
There you go. You know, Kurt Franklin, Plies is Kurt Franklin when he decided to get ratchet. And when he wanted to be civilized, he'd be Kurt Franklin. Because you never seen the two together.
Doppelganger.
You never seen them two together.
Stupid.
I don't know that I could rock with you on that.
You can imagine.
Just on a scientific level.
She killed it, man.
Hey, the Great Griot. She ain't great. They don't call her great for nothing, man. She's definitely the truth.
Does she still have her show?
The radio show?
Uh-huh.
We forgot to ask.
We sure did. We're going to have to have her back just for that question.
I know, right? 1 hour. Got one question to you, and we want to stretch it this whole hour. Hey, man. Now, we want to make sure that everybody is aware of what's going on, like we talked about last week, but the month of August, today's the 30th, so we got got today and tomorrow, but the month of August, we're using that to bring more awareness about mental health within the black community. So next week, we do that will be our first interview with Miss Eustacia Trawick Dixie, who works in the mental health field, and we'll get her information on being a mental health worker and working in the black community and different things that pertain to mental health in the black community. So we have a whole bunch of shows coming up for every Sunday within August. We have people who work with others who have mental health issues. We have people who have been able to overcome their mental health issues. And we're going on in the last Sunday in August. We're actually going to have a live video feed discussion on our Freedom Train YouTube channel, like the Google Plus, the Google Hangout YouTube channel thing. So I want to make sure that all of you check us out on that. And definitely we're going to make sure that the information is shared through this podcast. But we just want to make sure that we're using different ways to interact within our community. We'll also have commercials and PSAs and a whole lot of information, poll questions, trivia questions that all pertain to around mental health awareness, because we want to get people involved in the conversation, not just liking, but involved in the conversation and also taking action so we can better treat and heal our mental health issues within the black community. Know what I'm talking about? So, Jamie.
What's happening?
Pat.
What up?
Y'all freestyle battle right now. Go.
Man.
It's too late. That's for the
beginning. Ain't got nothing.
Nah, it's okay. Hey, man, I appreciate y'all boys for riding with me, man, on this Freedom Train. And I'm excited about what we have coming up in our future for the Freedom Train. And, hey, man, I mean, this network is growing, it's getting better, and like I say, man, I appreciate y'all for rocking with me and my crazy ideas and everything that we got going on. Y'all my homies.
We love you too, man. Stop being all soft. Stop being all soft and close the show. Do some kegels afterwards.
Hey, man. I'm gonna punch Jamie in the eye.
Oh, you need to strengthen up your pelvic floor.
Hey, forget you, Jamie. Two fingers up at you. F you, man.